Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the How to Bet the Kentucky Derby podcast, episode 4 in living color. Expect to have clocker Gary Young on. If you read the synopsis of the show, may not be familiar with the name, but really someone who wouldn't need an introduction if clockers were the celebrities that they sometimes deserve to be based on the calls they make. And Gary was one of the few extremely bullish, not only on American Pharoah's chances to win the Derby, but also the Triple Crown. And he's called many other solid shots in his more than 30 years of clocking experience. So looking forward to getting his insights. He is at the Ocala 2-year-old in training sale right now, so be calling in shortly. But the big thing with Gary that I wanted to have him on specifically today is that starting tomorrow, and that's assuming you're listening on Thursday, but if you're listening any other day, starting Friday, April 28th, Gary will be live at Churchill Downs, and he will be providing his insight on what he sees at Churchill Downs to TwinSpires.com. He and I are going to be shooting a rap show after the workouts each morning, and we'll get up to the day reports from Gary. So not only get a sense of what he likes or what he doesn't, but also the progression. Horse is improving, is one regressing, and what does that mean for the big day? So looking forward to getting those thoughts from Gary throughout the next week, and really looking forward to talking to him now to get his thoughts on the Derby group in general. Gary, thanks for the time. I know you're busy at the sale.
How are you? How are you, Ed?
Doing well.
Sitting here with my
really looking forward to.
He could be a big player in this Derby this year, Ed. You know, he's a big man on campus at Churchill Downs, and he wants to be a big man on May 6th.
On my way to Louisville. About 3 hours.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. I am too. Oh, so all right, Ed. What else is?
You might be on the same flight.
We might be. I'm going through Charlotte, and I get in there about 11 o'clock tonight, and Darren Rogers, my good buddy, will have all my credentials at the hotel, and we'll hit the ground running. I imagine with the rain and the forecast, there'll be a lot of workouts tomorrow and stuff.
We'll be out of the frying pan and into the fire for sure. Really looking forward to your thoughts, and as I told all our listeners, you are at the 2-year-old in training sale. So actually my first question is, do you have to sort of recalibrate what you're looking at, moving from unraced 2-year-old hopeful future stars to established classic hopefuls, or is it, you know, you're looking for a certain style of motion and you stick to that, or is it a different way of assessing what you're looking at based on their age and talent level?
Well, when you're watching a horse work for the Derby, you're kind of – you're watching them work for what they and their connections hope for will be the race of their life. When you watch them working for a 2-year-old in training sale, obviously their connections want them to go fast. But as a buyer, you're looking for something that that you foresee, that you can see talent in now, and then you can also see getting better as the careers and the years go by. You know, so that would it's a little bit different, yes. It's a little bit different. Yes, it is.
What you do, of course, beyond just the Derby and a lot of your trade is in Southern California, where a wide range is with any circuit of class and talent level. Some of these horses you'll be more familiar with than others. What's your approach? How do you compartmentalize assessing horses you've already seen versus getting to know those you haven't and trying to play catch up with only having a week or so? Do you do some homework? Do you talk to other people who have seen these horses? What's your approach there?
Yeah, I've watched the races that count, so to speak, the ones with potential Derby horses or the maiden races that are chock full of promising prospects. I watch those races from around the country, either live or on my computer at night. Do I get the luxury of watching those horses train on a daily basis? No. know, we had a really, you know, obviously we had a really good in Mastery this year, and I was a huge fan of his. I saw the highs and the lows of that the game that day when he won, and then the fan asked Mr. way down to the winner's circle if his horse was okay, and Bob looked over there and saw Mike climbing off the horse. You know, that was he's a very good horse, and I'm the only one that you know, thinks that California had a really strong hand in both the Derby and the Oaks and Mastery and a Unique Bella, but they're fragile animals, and neither one of them made the race. And from a gambling standpoint and everything, that actually makes them more wide open races, in my opinion. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people are going to toss most of the horses that came out of the Santa Anita Derby. And, you know, I can kind of see their point, but the track changed that day. The dirt races after Mandela won the Oaks were all kind of on the slow side, and the track changed that day. So I could, you know, I'm kind of giving them a little bit of a pass. You know, the race that kind of just really befuddled me in that race was the Battle of Midway race. I bet on him. And early on, I thought, wow, he broke good. He's going to get a good trip. But I never, in my wildest dreams, thought he would be inside of a three-horse duel going 46-2 to the half. And I thought it was a very commendable performance for him to still be in front with 50 yards to go. He was tired, and the final quarter of the race will not make anyone forget about Secretariat's Derby when he ran every quarter faster than the preceding quarter. But I thought it was an admirable performance for a horse that'll probably be, he'll be 15-1, maybe 10-15-1 in that Derby. So I mean, I thought it was
yeah, at least,
you know, I mean, hey, the winner of the Santa Anita Derby, he's probably going to be about the same price too, you know.
Right. Yeah, and that's, I don't think much will separate them odds wise, even though one was the winner.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't spent a lot of time on this podcast on the Oaks, but knowing you're based in Southern California, and to me, you know, a lot of talent was there, led by Unique Bella, but it seems at least short term the torch may have been passed. Santa Anita Oaks, Paradise Woods, Abel Tasman. I thought Abel Tasman maybe gets a pass. Not sure she ever would have won, but certainly probably would have been closer with a less adventurous opening to that race. To me, though, I've looked at the Oaks as California and everyone else. Do your eyes support that, or are you thinking you might see something from the other fillies that lead you away from California and the Oaks?
You know, I was shocked when Mandela's filly got beat the first time. I really was. And
more
and
surprising
she came back
when Unique Bella got beat?
You know, I knew Unique Bella was a little funny about the gate and stuff like that. I mean, there was a Peter Miller horse in there that was cranked to run a really good race the first time out. But I was, that I hadn't really seen trained, so, you know, I kind of known in here. I mean, the Paradise Whiz race, I saw all those horses. I didn't think on the earth, on below our feet, that she was going to lose that day, and she did. You know, she really didn't have a whole lot of excuse. And then she came back and beat a bunch of maidens like I thought she would, trained terrific for the Oaks. And the way the race came up, when she pretty much, I thought the race was over halfway around the clubhouse turn when she was in front by two lengths going easy, and Abel Tasman kind of took a while to get going that day, and she was back there off the pace. You know, I would definitely have Paradise Woods as my top choice in this year's Oaks as of right now. To sum up your question, though, I'd
All right. Yeah, I didn't mean to divert too much from the Derby, but with you seeing them a lot, definitely wanted to get your take, and especially since she's so lightly raised, but, man, I thought she was pretty special as well. Moving back to the Derby, though, one benefit of the Breeders' Cup being at Santa Anita, as you have seen a few of these, is two-year-olds. But it's been a while, and we'll start with Classic Empire because A, he's the likely favorite, and B, he's someone who has shown maybe a quirky personality, to put it kindly, in the morning. When it comes to a race of the Derby's magnitude and all that surrounds it, is there anything you look for that sort of turns you off of a horse that's going to be running in front of 160,000, or is it just totally based on the individual and what they're showing on the track?
You know, let's face it. I mean, he has had his moments in the past, and there are a lot of people there that day. So it's something that, that I'm sure the Cassie camp is aware of and they're concerned of, and they're probably going to school him pretty good in the paddock. And, you'll know in the paddock and stuff like that if he's feeling like running, or if he's got his mind on other things. You hope he's overcame that. I mean, having to run back in 3 weeks, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, but he showed last year when he won the Breeders' Cup. I mean, That looked like two very special horses that came to the wire that day when him and Dale Robbins' horse came down there. It did. So, be interesting to see how he handles the crowd and everything. But no one's going to question this horse's talent. I mean, no one's going to question his talent. That's for sure.
You mentioned that runner-up, not this time, already retired, but Practical Joke was third. Chad Brown adding blinkers. Another question that surrounded him for some is his distance. And that is a variable for a lot of people when handicapping the Derby, is what do you make of the mile and a quarter? What do you like to see on the track? What cues do you look for when you're watching horses train that tell you their fitness level for a 10 furlong race versus something shorter?
You know how they get the length of the come down into their workout and stuff like that. I think Practical's a talented horse. I'm like a lot of other people that have some definite trepidations on how far he wants to run. He's a talented horse, but I have some doubts about how far he wants to run. The Bluegrass was a funny race. I mean, to think that horse won the race, and I mean, this horse came running up alongside of a maiden and kind of didn't get by him late. There was a lot of head scratching after the race. Let's put it that way. But I do like him as a horse, but he's going to have to show it to me at a mile and a quarter before I'm going to believe it.
And a little deeper in the juvenile field was some Southern California horses. And that was sort of the first thought, that maybe California didn't have as big a hand as in other years until Mastery came along, at least. Have you seen progression from a horse like Gormley, who was pretty well beaten that day, or is he better than those out there, but maybe not up to Classic Empire if he's at his best?
You know, it's a tough call. I mean, Gormley has shown talent, but the day that Mastery injured himself, he flicked him off his shoulder like a bug at the 2.5 furlong pole. I think him and Royal Mower are decent horses. Would they be in my top three choices if I had to give a top three right now? Probably not.
Yeah.
So.
Well, two people. Anyway. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you're good.
Two favorites. We haven't actually talked about three of the four likely favorites. Always Dreaming, McCracken, Irish War Cry. Always Dreaming and McCracken are already there, so we'll start with them. Any thoughts on what you're sort of looking for this week from them? Always Dreaming won his last prep, did so impressively, and pretty much launched into the favorite role. And McCracken lost his, but really hasn't lost any luster from a win odds perspective. Maybe would have been the favorite with a win, but he's still right there among the top choices. But to me, I definitely think need to see improvement from him numbers-wise, but maybe the fitness will tell a different story. What do you know about those two?
You know, McCracken, one thing you can't get past is that he's 3-for-3 at Churchill Downs. I think that's a huge plus for him. Always Dreaming. He got a very good trip, and he won he won very impressively that day. It's kind of tough. It was behind a three, just a horse, to nice horse. We said he had a long. Had a long campaign. He's not particularly important horse. No one could deny that the horse was impressive. The fact that maybe not down and affirmed in this year's Derby, it's still going to be a better group than he ran in the Florida Derby that day.
Right.
McCracken put in a really nice run for about an eighth of a mile around the turn the other day, and he flattened out. They kind of said between the lines going in that he wasn't cranked for the race. I have seen some videos of him working since the race, and he does look like he's working well. But I think you're also right in what you said, Ed, and that he's going to have to move up in this race. But, Ian Wilkes has been around some horses, and when he was with NASCAR, that have peaked on this day, so he's seen how it's done, and I'm sure he's going to probably have the same thing done with this horse this day.
Yeah, that would definitely be the hope for those taking 8-1 on him. I'm probably not going to be among them. The last of the four clear favorites is Irish War Cry. Beat Classic Empire and the Holy Bull through a complete dud in the Fountain of Youth, and then back at it in the Wood Memorial. I've sort of been saying I like him, and for the past week or so, I think if it were a situation where Graham had skipped the Fountain of Youth and said, oh, we're pointing to the Wood, and his PPs looked like that, undefeated, beat Classic Empire, won the Wood, he'd be a clear favorite at 5-2. Now, obviously, you have if he runs the Fountain of Youth race, he's nowhere here, so that's part of the better price.
Yeah.
But to me, he looks like an overlay based on what he know we can do. But I'm very interested once he gets to Churchill, what you think, because that's going to be a part of the puzzle for me. What do you know of him, and do you know of any excuse in the Fountain of Youth? And what are you looking forward to seeing from him on the track as one of the late arrivals?
You just want to see him relax. I think that's the big thing with him. He's a nice horse. I mean, he looks like a stake horse when he's out there. He's a tall, kind of a Scottie Pippen type build type of horse. But, I can't deny that his two races were very, very impressive races that he won. And if he brings those two races to the table, he's going to be a factor in this race and perhaps the horse to beat in this race. He's a good horse. I don't know what the reason why that he ran like he did the day of it, of the Fountain of Youth, but I happen to share your opinion that he was, he was a real racehorse when, you know,
Yeah, and Graham's done it before with Animal Kingdom. So, you know, sort of talked about some other trainers that have been there, done that. He's one of them. Definitely don't want to go through the field one by one because we'll be doing that as they train anyway throughout the week. But any others we didn't touch on that have been on your mind is one you're, like, especially looking forward to seeing how they look?
No. I mean, the coverage of the workouts are going to have a in it. In the Animal Kingdom Derby, but his workout kind of was like a lights out kind of workout, and I went with him, and he did get there that day. So I think the workouts that we're going to see the next couple of mornings hopefully shed a lot more light on it, both some positively and some negatively, sir.
All right. Well, Gary, I'm really looking forward to talking to you each day. We'll have the video up on YouTube, and obviously our social media channels will send it out. And for those listening to the podcast, the Synopsis has a link to Gary's website so you can read more about him leading up to a big week. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll find the right horses.
Hopefully we will, Ed. It's really good talking to you, and I wish the fans hello, and I will be up in the grandstand watching the workouts on behalf of you and them tomorrow morning.
Very good. All right, we'll travel safe. Hopefully you and Mark and whoever else coming to Louisville today make it. We really appreciate Gary's time, and we appreciate your time listening to us on the Hot About the Kentucky Derby podcast. Again, that's video start tomorrow with Gary live from Churchill Downs. That's on our YouTube channel at Twin Spires.
Oh,
and this
point.
Podcast will continue as well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Gary Young, everyone. And that's it for us. So thanks for listening, and look forward to talking with you tomorrow about another How to Bet the Kentucky Derby podcast topic. Have fun, everyone.